session number 28624, reel 3.
Good morning. It's the second recording with Mr. Kinghorn. Good morning.
Good morning.
The last time that we spoke, you were actually finishing your basic training, but there was one or two items that we hadn't spoken about, and one of them was route marches. Do you recall doing route marches on basic training?
Yes, I do. Yeah, we most certainly did route marches. By and large, they were restricted to the 9 mile march in full kit. But we did have a battle camp, as you do to complete your just before passing out. And during that time, they'd have been extended, I would think, and they were cross country as opposed to along the road. And we were probably doing something like 15 miles in full kit. But that was most certainly a route march. And we did many of the 9 milers throughout the basic training, and only probably at battle camp did we do 2 or 3, perhaps 15 milers.
And when you say full kit, was that with a pack on your back?
Yeah, pack on your back, front pouches, rear pouches, and a pack on your back, and and your bedroll, and that's regarded as full kit. Yes, we had all that.
Was it heavy?
Yeah, it was heavy. Not exceptionally heavy, but you know, you would have rations for the next 24 hours and your bedroll and so on, ammunition. It wasn't heavy as long as you adjusted the straps. That was the vital thing. You know, if something is half hanging off you, hopeless. But if it's right up and just below your neck and firmly secure to your shoulders and back, it's not uncomfortable and not over heavy.
Okay. And battle camp. What was battle camp?
Battle camp was just, I think it lasted a week, and we were under canvas. You went to a training area, you were either under canvas or occasionally slept rough anyhow. And you were just putting into play everything that you'd learned during your training. So you were doing section attacks, and you were crossing rivers. You were just having a wonderful open air week, really, sleeping rough, as I said, for 2 or 3 nights, or in a tent, doing a lot of cross-country work and night patrols, that sort of thing. Just putting into play everything that you'd learned.
And physical training at camp, did you get any physical training?
No. Physical training, no, I mean, by virtue of the fact that you were, you know, moving cross-country and walking some long distances and on the move, really, all the time, that was physical training enough. But by then you were fit anyway. I mean, in the sort of 14 or 15 weeks in camp up to that point, as I'm sure that you were pretty fit. A lot of gymnasium work and so on kept you fit. So it was physical enough.
And boxing?
No boxing in basic training. That came later in the battalion, but absolutely none at all in basic training. Lots of sport, every Wednesday afternoon and weekends, but no boxing.
Okay. And weapon training, your rifle, can you describe your weapon training?
Yeah, that came into play, I think, from memory, probably after the first 4 weeks of training, and we were then allocated a rifle. And weapon training took place in class to start with, just learning the weapon, its working parts and so on, assembling, disassembling, assembling, and having relay races, doing this sort of thing, you know, very competitive, until you were really very familiar with your rifle. You were then drilling with it anyhow, but the weapon was yours and you had got to know it. Live firing.
Okay. So your rifle, you were describing the rifle.
Yes, that's right. So once you were familiar with it, we then did embark on a number of visits to the live firing ranges down on the east, down on the south coast. We were close to Brighton. I can't quite remember the name of the ranges, but there we made many a visit. I mean, we were certainly live firing once a week from then on. So a lot of shooting went on, which was important.
Had you handled a rifle before?
No, not before. No, I certainly hadn't. I was never in the school cadets or anything like that, so this was my first.
Do you remember the type of rifle you had?
Yeah, that was a self-loading rifle. They were brand new to the army at that time. Self-loading rifle, 7.62 ammunition, and it was, I think it had only come in about 1960. The L303 had gone out 59 or 60, I think. So this was an excellent new rifle.
And do you recall how you maintained it?
Yes, I mean, I think we were just taught everything that was necessary by a very enthusiastic weapon training corporal. And cleaning and oiling was absolutely vital. And I mean, checking took place all the time. So, I mean, it wasn't a case of trying to get away with something. I mean, we knew what we had to do, and we were conscious of the fact that we understood why it had to be properly maintained. And indeed, later on, when I got to the battalion, it became even more apparent why one should maintain. But there was a very good grounding I got there.
And you've mentioned that you had your own rifle. Did you keep your rifle with you during the night, or was your rifle put in an armoury?
No, went into an armoury. Whenever you'd finished a weapon training exercise or live firing exercise, you would clean it yet again, even though you hadn't been using it. It had to be cleaned again, oiled, and it would be inspected, and then straight back into the armoury. So unless you were using it or learning about it, it was in the armoury.
And did you have a bayonet as well?
Yeah, bayonet was part of the rifle equipment, and that would be, I'm pretty certain we didn't do, we did bayonet drill, but we didn't, I don't think we ever learnt to bayonet from memory, but it was part of the rifle, so you would wear it in the appropriate place on your belt, and get on with the business of working with your rifle.
And what about hand grenade?
Hand grenade, no, we didn't. Not. I don't think we did. Maybe mixing up, but later on I became a training officer myself and taught recruits, and they certainly did hand grenade, but I don't think I did that. Of course, I did when I got. Became a cadet, but not at basic training. I don't recall doing any grenade work.
Okay. And light and heavy machine guns?
We did. Yes, the light machine gun we did, certainly. That was part of our drill. I'd forgotten that. And very little live firing was done there, but we did learn the workings of machine gun. And we did probably have about two occasions on which we fired that machine gun. Yeah.
Okay. And did you have any anti-tank instruction?
No, absolutely none. No. I'm not sure that that is a part of basic training. That becomes a little more specialised and would relate only to the infantry, I think. That came later.
Right, okay. And last week we spoke about your passing out parade. And I believe you had some leave after your passing out parade.
That's correct, 2 weeks.
And then you went back to the training college where you'd been.
I went back to the Intelligence Corps depot at Maresfield, and with the sole purpose, I then wasn't being posted. The entire squad went back, and they were then all being, everyone else was being posted after their respective new posting, post posting. I remained there because I was awaiting War Office Selection Board interview at Westbury in Wiltshire. So I had time there kicking my heels and said goodbye to my buddies, and there I remained.
Okay. And so what did you do in the time whilst you were waiting?
Well, I was just a general dog's body. I was made a Lance Corporal, so that gave me a little status above that of being around the whole time with recruits. That gave me a separate NAFI to go to, the NCO's canteen. And I did just help out at the administrative office. I was probably running errands or marching new recruits around the camp from one lesson to another occasionally. In fact, I did that quite a lot, I do recall. But I didn't help with the training, but I was just a general errand boy, really.
And were you still in the same billets, or did you have a separate accommodation now?
No, I moved billet. There were I moved into an NCO's billet, and for the short time that I was just kicking my heels, but I was no longer in with. Well, I wasn't a recruit anymore, and the recruits all stayed in their own billets.
Okay. And do you remember when you got notice that you had to go before the selection board?
It wouldn't have been very long. I would think it happened about 5 or 6 weeks later. I'm sure that they had already applied on my behalf for a slot in the Royal Office Selection Board. I mean, Westbury is like a sausage machine, really. I mean, week after week after week, there were a squad of people arriving for these interviews, and so once my application was in, it just came up. I would think it was 5 or 6 weeks after I got back to camp.
And where did you have to go for this selection board?
That was Westbury in Wiltshire, quite near Warminster, and a nice house in the country, and well, in a village in the country, and there you were sort of, I think we were there for about 3 nights, I think it was a 4-day process in those days.
And how did you feel?
Oh, excited about it. I really did. I felt quite prepared for what? I didn't know, but I felt prepared for it. No, I was full of confidence and ready for it. I'd heard from others roughly what happened. But unlike the present, you weren't sort of coached or deliberately prepared for it. You were just left to find out what you were likely, what's likely to happen to you. And then you got there and waited to see what would happen to you. Nowadays, there are sort of pre-RCB, as it's now, Regular Commissions Board, not a War Office Selection Board. Nowadays, there are pre-RCB training courses where you spend a week or 10 days, you know, having a dummy run of what's going to happen to you. Not then, you just arrived and waited to see.
And what did happen?
Well, it was all a very civilised process. You arrived one day and you were allocated your little section. You were in sections of about 8, I think, and you were given a sort of bib to wear. You were either red section or yellow section or blue section, whatever. And then we got there, I think, in the afternoon. Then, having been briefed and allocated to a section and shown where you were sleeping, we then assembled for dinner. And again, it was very civilized. It was much more like a mess than the canteen I'd been used to. And then it started in earnest next day. But having said that, I mean, I think they were watching you the whole time. So from the moment you arrived and registered, someone was watching you in a sort of casual way. So, but the actual interviews and assault course and sort of games and tasks and everything else, they started the following morning. And I think certainly for 2 full days, but you know, the memory fades.
And at the end of the interview process, did you know that you had been accepted, or had you to wait?
No. my understanding is, I think we got there on Monday, say early evening or afternoon, late afternoon, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I think we went off probably on Thursday lunchtime, something like that. And it's then that the directing staff, the officers who've been watching you, the majors and colonels and so on, they then start to meet on the Thursday afternoon and right through the Friday, I think, to decide who's in and who's out. So you have no idea, you just go off and back to your unit, and your unit is then informed as to whether you're going off to Mom's Officer Cadet School or whether you're going home.
Do you remember if you had to wait a long time to hear?
No, it was pretty quick, I'm sure. I think it was the following week. Yeah. No, you're not kept in suspense. And I think their assessment is a fairly straightforward one. There might be one or two people who might just be in or might just be out, but by and large, they know. And I think, you know, with hindsight, you have a pretty good idea, too, whether you've really fluffed your lines or didn't look like much of a leader or whatever. You have a pretty good idea.
And was it only for the Gorgons that you were trying to be an officer for?
Well, yes. I mean, that was my intention, that I would just be a Gordon Hander. But in point of fact, all you're doing at this stage is just obtaining a place at Officer Cadet School. It's when you're at Officer Cadet School and some distance down the line in that course that you start applying for whatever you want to be. And there's another process to that. But at this point, although I knew that I wanted to be a Gordon Hander, no one even asked me what I wanted to do. We were just trying to get a place at Mons.
Okay. So when you did hear that you'd been accepted, did you have to wait a while before you could get to the college?
Yes, it would be hard to know, yes, but you would then wait for a term to start, and I think they were quarterly intakes at Mons in those days. It was quite a busy schedule, so in other words, every 3 months there'd be one forming. So I wouldn't know where I was in the sort of 3 month wait, but I certainly didn't wait 3 months. Perhaps I waited half that time, but it wasn't very long at all.
And did you still remain at Marsfield?
Yes, I did. I was there doing these little jobs again. But I didn't mind that. I now remember one thing I did was they asked me if I wanted to learn to drive because I didn't have a license, and I said yes. So I did a 2 week course within the camp, learning how to maintain a car, which I can't do anyhow. But it didn't matter. I mean, you were also learning to drive, and 2 weeks later, I passed the test and got a driving license. So that was a useful addendum. But otherwise, I was just doing what I'd done before, which was running errands for a company training office.
Okay. So you've been accepted for Mons and you're now going to travel there. Was that from Marsfield that you travelled?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, as I say, it was, you know, a matter of weeks, but certainly no more leave. And one day, you know, given your posting order, given a railway warrant, and you find that you're not at Marsfield anymore. You're now at, in Aldershot, getting off the train there and making your way up to Mons Officer Cadet School and the start of something new.
And was someone at the station to meet you, or?
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, what? Well, yes, in a sense, you didn't have to find your way. You got to the station, and you know, quite a number of people were arriving. We all knew what time we had to get there, and so our trains might arrive at a different time because people are arriving from north, south, east, and west. It was all within an hour and a half of each other, and there was a truck there which. You just waited for it, and it was only about a 2 mile drive to the station, then the truck would come back, take whoever else was there, so there was someone there to take us. Yep.
And can you remember the reception you got at the unit when you arrived?
I don't think I can terribly. I mean, I do remember, well, I'd come from a well-run depot, but this was especially well-run, and you were never in doubt as to where you ought to report. I mean, as you got out of the truck, the fellow would send you over to the necessary office. You registered, and it was you. You were then sent off to, again, very old-fashioned barracks, Mons. They were another wartime place with these spider billets. In other words, there would be a central point, which was the showers and latrines and so on, and then off those, I think there were probably was a spider. I think there were six billets that went off. They were very old-fashioned things, and there you would all have a dormitory of probably 8 again, I think. And so this entire complex would, if it was fixed, would have something like 48 people in it. And but there you would go. You allocated your bed, put your kit in it, and then head off for a meal and a briefing, and the whole thing had started. And that was a 6-month course.
And was, you know, your bed, was it any different to the type you'd had before?
Absolutely not. I think the standards of everything, you were now no longer someone who was coming along learning how to make a bed. So the standards were extremely high of cleanliness, bed making, kit inspections, everything at Mons was the highest order, and very high quality training staff. The drill sergeants, they were all Guards Brigade. I think without exception, all the drill staff were the Sergeant Major, the RSM, all from the Brigade of Guards. The training officers weren't, certainly not, but everyone was really a high flyer. And it was very apparent, you know, there was that sort of atmosphere. I hadn't come from a place that was relaxed, but anything but this place was intense.
Okay. And did you have any more storage space or space in the billets than you'd had previously?
Absolutely not. No, it was a carbon copy. Your bed space, your bedside table, and your steel wardrobe. Exactly the same. Mm-hmm.
And did you still have to go through daily, weekly inspections?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Every day, and every day began even earlier, probably. And you were woken up by these training sergeants coming and ripping the sheets off, and your day began. And oh yes, the daily inspection was a critical part of your training.
And could you still be punished, you know, if something wasn't quite up to standard?
Yeah, you were being punished the whole time. I mean, it was a deliberate act. I mean, on the drill square, for example, you would be called out. This happened to everyone. I remember being called out by this Welsh Guard sergeant who said you were yawning. March yourself to the guard room. And you march yourself off to the guard room and into a cell, and you know, there you would shut the door on yourself, lie down in the bunk, and wait till company orders. Then you'd be marched in front of the major who was commanding that particular company you were in, and you'd been charged with yawning on parade. You would point out foolishly for the first time, you learned later not to, that you hadn't actually been yawning, and indeed I hadn't, but that didn't matter. So there was a second charge, one for yawning and one for telling a lie to the effect that you weren't. So there were two charges now, and the punishment would be 7 nights of appearing every hour on the hour from 8 o'clock, I think. You know, your day, your normal training day would end when it did, and you'd have an evening meal, and then all your kit cleaning started. Well, you would do that along with everyone else, but then at 8 o'clock, say instead of going along to the NAFI or something with the others, you would then start going on parade, reporting to the guard room, being inspected at 8, told, of course, that you weren't nearly smart enough, go back and do this and next thing, then come back at 9, then at 10, and be repeated until midnight. And if they still found something wrong with you, it would go on till 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning. And then, you know, you were, which wasn't fun, because you were up at 6 the next day just the same. And this would go on for 7 nights. Now, this all, apparently, for yawning, which you weren't. But it was just to teach you, really, that, you know, life wasn't going to be a bowl of cherries. Yeah. And this was happening not to me, but to everyone. You know, all at different time, you see 5 or 6 fellows marching off to the guard room for offences they hadn't committed. But this was happening to them now, and everyone knew it was going to happen to them. some stage. That would happen to you again, of course, a month later or 3 weeks later. All part of the training.
And how did you feel about it?
Well, you know, it's not a jolly thing. I must say, if everyone else in the billet is fast asleep and you are midnight, they're waiting to go off, and then at 1 o'clock you still got to go again. You know, you don't think that's terrific fun, but you know, there's such a good spirit in the place, and you're all in it together. That's a great thing, and it's only you that particular, and you know, there'll be someone else suffering the next. And honestly, it just came and went. You didn't feel, certainly didn't feel badly about it, just a bit tedious at times.
And you spoke about when you were doing your basic training, how the men in the billets like formed a team. Was it still the same at Mons?
Absolutely, yeah, because a billet inspection meant, you know, it's the billet that belongs to eight of you, and great teamwork, and that was good, you know, having come from a place where you'd done it already once. This intensity, as I said, was much greater here, but basically the same thing, and you know, the eight of you were responsible for your billet, and no one let anyone else down. And because of the spider complex, there were a lot of people responsible for the shower and latrine area. So you all 48 of you were making sure that everything was in good nick.
Okay. And so did you still have, was it still like your basic training where you had inspections and you had drill? Did they take it any further, or was it?
Yes, because you know, the leadership element was different. I mean, the drill was perhaps more complicated. You're passing out, your commissioning parade is a more complicated one. But, you know, drill is drill at the end of the day. You're on the tarmac square and you're just drilling away, much the same as you had done before. But weapon training is weapon training. Live firing is live firing. But you're taking it a step further insofar as you are being taught to become a platoon commander. So you're talking about no longer just being a private soldier in a section, which basic training is sort of built around, but you're now going to be a young subaltern who's going to be commanding three of those sections. So you're learning platoon tactics, never more than that, and it's never too complicated. You know, the company tactics, battalion tactics, they all come later in courses once you're a regimental officer. But here they keep it fairly basic and simple, but it was taking you quite a step further away from your basic training. You were being taught to command a platoon, and leadership comes into that.
And do you remember something about platoon tactics? You know, some of the things they might have taught you there.
Yes, well, you were being tested the whole time, really, all the way through, because you would probably operate as a platoon, and you were doing this out in the training areas too. Much more of Mons, as opposed to the basic training, took place outside Mons. Basic training, you know, you were in camp most of the time, unless you went out for an IMAR march, but you came back to camp. The only time, really, we were outside that was, you know, your last week of battle camp, and that was any time we really got to a training area. With Mons, you were out in the training areas outside Aldershot, and the whole time you were digging in, you were digging trenches, you were digging trenches in the formation that they would be dug, excuse me, if you were platoon in defence or whatever. So you were always operating as a platoon, but of course there can only be one platoon commander in that platoon, so all the time you were learning how to be either a rifleman or lance corporal number one on the machine gun, or the corporal commanding that section, or you might be the platoon sergeant, you might be anything, you might be the company platoon signaller, you might be any of those jobs. So you were learning them all, and then your turn would come when you were the platoon commander, commanding all these cadets who were all performing every job under the sun. And so you were learning every job and taking your turn too to be platoon commander. Very good training, very good system.
And did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. Loved it. Yes, I did.
And is the area outside Mons, is it quite rough ground?
Yes, it is, yeah. It,